Borders books stores as a special order item. I'm afraid the Borders has never been willing to put it on their shelves. I think that they view it as a bit controversial, but even though the book is now in its eighth printing, and they would have sold a lot of copies if they'd been willing to just run with it. Nonetheless,
yeah,
most of them will special order, and the book can be ordered from LostHorizons.com. Anyone looking to order needs simply to go to LostHorizons.com.
He scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And just before we get to our regularly scheduled guest for this afternoon, I want to mention the passing of Bill Buckley. And Bill Buckley, of course, is lauded and praised by all the phony conservatives in this country, and I'm sure many really legitimate conservatives look upon Bill Buckley as one of the fathers of the conservative movement. What no one will tell you is he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a member of Skull and Bones. He was a member of the elite that really wanted to create a conservative and a liberal movement of right and left, Republican, Democrat, get the people squabbling, but never tell them what's really going on. And so the National Review, which William Buckley published for many years and is still being published, had wonderful articles in it. And they talk about conservative philosophy. And I subscribed to it for many years and believed what it said because most of what he said were true. The only trouble was that they didn't tell you the whole truth. They didn't tell you about the elite who control our country and create all these diversions so we'll be squabbling back and forth between Democrats and Republicans and conservatives and liberals without ever really addressing what the real problem is. And the real problem is we have an elite, a group of very, very powerful and wealthy people who believe they have the right to rule, and they do rule in the United States. So next time you read or you hear the people lauding Bill Buckley, and certainly I think I hate to see anybody pass away, but I believe that Bill Buckley betrayed the conservative movement, betrayed his nation, because his loyalty was not to the United States, but to this ethereal dream of a new world order, a new world religion, a new world leader. But, of course, you're never going to hear that elsewhere. Well, with that as the background, we have Mr. William Grigg with us this afternoon or evening, depending upon where you are. And William is certainly the senior editor of the New American Magazine for many years, always one of my favorite writers. And now, since he's not working with them anymore, he's working with other conservative organizations, but truly conservative organizations that are getting the real truth out, not the laundered truth that the establishment CFR Skull and Bones wants you to hear. William Grigg is certainly one of the most exciting writers and commentators we have, and always a pleasure to have him here with us at Radio Liberty. William, thanks very much for coming on board today.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me again. Really appreciate those kind words.
Go right ahead.
I do think that we have to expatiate just a little bit longer on the passing of Mr. Buckley.
Okay.
Because he is somebody I consider to be one of the more significant figures in the history of media. This organ that we call the media, whether you're talking about what used to be called the press and now is referred to more frequently as the media because it involves the electronic media such as radio and television, now the internet and the blogosphere, Buckley was really the first conspicuous conservative media figure, and he was positioned in such a way that he came to define conservatism for about a quarter of a century or so. He was more or less the pontiff of the establishment depicted right, and it's by no means insignificant that he came from a background in the CIA. Not many people are willing to talk about that element of Buckley's background, but it's in all the biographies that have been published by various sources about William F. Buckley. I know that Sam Tannenhaus, the New York Times, is busy writing a biography of Buckley that should be published sometime later this year. It'll be interesting to see how deeply he gets into the background that Mr. Buckley had with the CIA, working in deep cover operations when he was in Mexico for a year back in the early 1950s.
And, of course, the CIA, one of their functions is to plant people
exactly
within the media to filter the news. In other words, most of the news that get out, it's just the important stories that don't get out And you will never find an article in the National Review, to my knowledge, condemning the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, or Skull and Bones, all of which, of course, Mr. Buckley at one time or another was associated with. We'll be right back.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. The wise men had the North Star, Dorothy the yellow brick road. But like Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi, you have an automotive force that helps you find your way. When I return, I'll enlighten you.
I'm Bobby Likas, and I've discovered a fountain of youth for cars. One reason our cars get old before their time is the same thing that keeps them going, fuel. The carbon deposits left by fuel burned in your engine can choke off its air in fuel mixture, reducing efficiency.
The BG Fuel Service removes harmful carbon buildup, dramatically improves power and mileage, and includes BG44K to treat the entire fuel system. To learn more, go to BGFindTheShop.com.
BG.
Though the sun does a great job all day, during its nighttime sabbatical, your vehicle's headlights illuminate your way. And this force has gone high-tech. Bosch's Adaptive Lighting Directional Headlamp System monitors vehicle speed, steering angle, and acceleration to anticipate the road ahead. It then continually adjusts headlamp patterns accordingly, switching combinations of 7 different lighting elements inside the lamp so you can see more clearly and drive more safely. Hey, who says there's nothing new under the sun? I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your tornado unit today. Or visit tornadoair.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Grigg, and he was simply talking about William Buckley's CIA contacts. Buckley was in the CIA, but nobody talks about that. And of course, as I pointed out, and as William Odom, Lieutenant General William Odom, pointed out in his book, Fixing Intelligence, the CIA has journalists or people planted within the media to control the news. And isn't it interesting that Bill Buckley, a CIA agent, suddenly comes out and sets up the National Review magazine that becomes the leading conservative publication, and he spends years, of course, pushing the conservative philosophy, but never telling you the truth about, of course, the people who are really running our country. Why? And, of course, he's certainly not going to be attacking the CIA with his magazine. If he does, it'll certainly not be telling you the real things that they're doing. And so here we see a perfect example of how the CIA works to control the reality of the American people. And with that as a background, William, you pick up the story.
Yeah, we have to talk about that and the fact that it's so conspicuously not delved into by the establishment-approved journalists who write biographies or critiques of William F. Buckley's career, I think, is very significant. About 21 years ago, actually 31 years ago, 1977, Carl Bernstein, one half of the Woodward and Bernstein pair from Watergate, pointed out that there were something on the order of 400 U.S. journalists who had been employed by the CIA in some capacity or the other, and that ranged from freelancers who were paid as stringers or as contributors to various journals who are regularly debriefed by the CIA, or actual CIA officers who are working under deep cover. You had a person or persons of that sort working for just about every media outlet of any significance. And this is 31 years ago, way back in 1977. And it's interesting, there's another book that just came out. You made mention of William Odom's book. There's another book that just came out called The Mighty Wurlitzer, which goes into some depth of field describing the CIA-created journalistic fronts that were set up at the time that William F. Buckley began his career as a journalist. He came out of Yale. Yale is pretty much the happy hunting ground for CIA talent scouts. They're always looking for Yalies, at least when they got started, when they grew out of the OSS, Bill Donovan's communist-infused intelligence agency during World War II. When the OSS became the CIA, they went to Yale to look for their top echelon prospects. And a lot of the people who went into positions of high trust in the CIA came out of the Skull and Bones Society. And, of course, Mr. Buckley was a bonesman. He was somebody who had experience living abroad, and he had foreign language experience, which is something the CIA officers, or rather CIA recruiters, look for. He had lived in Mexico. His first language was Spanish. His second language was French. The reason why he spoke with that somewhat stilted, affected English accent was because he had a governess who taught him English after he had learned Spanish and French to begin with. And so when he went to Mexico as a deep cover CIA agent, it'd be interesting to find out what he was doing in Mexico exactly. He was there for about a year. And that's about all he'll own up to in terms of his formal association with the CIA. But I proceed on the assumption that if a person is a CIA agent, he's pretty much in it for life. Once a spook, always a spook, as far as I can tell. Particularly when somebody excels at deep cover operations. And we know that when he was at Yale, Wilmore Kendall, who was a Trotskyite Marxist and also had CIA connections, was Mr. Buckley's patron at Yale. So there's some really deep and lasting contacts of that sort between Mr. Buckley and the whole foundation, the whole matrix controlled by the CIA. And it's also interesting that in the early 1950s, you had journals like Encounter magazine and various so-called congresses of writers and journalists that were set up as front groups by the CIA. And most of them were of an internationalist, vaguely leftist leaning, whereas you would have to have some kind of a dialectical counterpart in order to cover the full spectrum of the political playing field. And so it stands to reason that the CIA would look around and try to find somebody to set up a company-controlled conservative movement, conservative journal. And here's this individual who's trained in deep cover operations. He's a Yalie, he's a Bonesman. His patron at Yale had been a CIA player, Mr. Kendall. And so when he started National Review in 1956, I contend that it's probably smart to assume, as a working hypothesis if nothing else, that National Review was intended to be the so-called right-wing dialectical counterpoint to leftist journals like Encounter that were controlled by the CIA. That way they covered the entire spectrum. And it's interesting as well that one of the very first things that Buckley did before he created the National Review back in 1956, which always ran at a loss, by the way, was always being subsidized by someone. They were losing money by hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. The New York Times obituary today says that in addition to subscriptions and advertisements that they sold in order to make money for the journal, that it was subsidized by, I guess, the Buckley family and by donations from readers, which, of course, is true, but you can't run a magazine with the type of deficits National Review was running unless it's being subsidized by somebody. We don't know who that would be, but, of course, there's a three-letter agency that has all kinds of fronts and assets that are deniable for the purpose of running operations of that sort. So, once again, there's a very logical inference we could have with respect to the Daddy Warbucks behind National Review. But even before he started National Review, way back in 1952, as a nobody from any practical point of view. Mr. Buckley was extolling the idea of big centralized government. He wrote a now-notorious essay for Commonweal magazine in which he said the following, and I'm quoting now from Buckley, "We have to accept big government for the duration, for neither an offensive nor a defensive war can be waged except through the instrument of a totalitarian bureaucracy within our shores." And toward the end of confronting the Soviet Union, in order to confront the Soviet Union, Buckley wrote, "We must endorse the extensive and productive tax laws that are needed to support a vigorous anti-communist foreign policy, including large armies and air forces, atomic power, central intelligence, war production boards, and the attendant centralization of power in Washington, even with Truman at the reins of it all." So wrote Mr. Buckley in Commonweal from January 25th of 1952.
Well, I know, but it's what's really so interesting about that, William, is the fact that at the same time we were arming ourselves to protect ourselves from the wicked communists, we were financing the communists,
yeah,
directly or indirectly, so we'd have an enemy, so we could rally the people behind the government and people like William Buckley and the CIA to protect us from the wicked communists who had created and continued to finance, and who we are still financing to this very day, which is
exactly
so incredible. Go right ahead.
Well, it's interesting as well that one of the people who challenged the assumption that the Soviet Union was this vast behemoth that couldn't be brought down except through the creation of a totalitarian bureaucracy and this immense military-industrial complex, one of the people who challenged that was Murray Rothbard, the late Murray Rothbard. And when he died in 1995, Mr. Buckley went out of his way to execrate Murray Rothbard, to talk about how he was, if you will, sort of the political equivalent of David Koresh, the leader of the Branch Davidians. And Mr. Buckley was always in the habit of writing these incredibly ungenerous obituaries for people you wouldn't expect to have merited such treatment. I mean, he was conspicuously generous in talking about people like Theodore White, the liberal writer for Time magazine. He was very generous in talking about a number of people. About the only leftist he really doesn't have a whole lot of patience for was Gore Vidal, and that's because Gore Vidal didn't like Buckley at all, and during their stint as joint commentators of the 1968 Democratic National Convention, Vidal got under Buckley's skin to the point where Buckley threatened to beat his face in there on live television. I think that's the only person who's ever succeeded in penetrating the mask of serene erudition that was Mr. Buckley's standard demeanor. But the thing is, when you had genuine conservatives, whether they were people like Murray Rothbard, people like Robert Welch, who founded the John Birch Society, other people such as Frank Chodorov, who talked about the idea of trying to bring about a normalization of our situation with the government reduced to its constitutional role, to decentralize power and to refrain from getting involved in an interventionist foreign policy abroad, Mr. Buckley would go after those people hammer and tongs because that was his raison d'etre. I contend that he was put where he was for the purpose of promoting a post-constitutional conservatism. He created a type of conservatism which the Constitution, for all effects and purposes, didn't exist. I mean, we talk about the so-called Enlightenment era of the 1700s, 1800s, the philosophy that came out of the Enlightenment era as the belief that we can organize the world as if God didn't exist. That was sort of the idea that animated people like Voltaire and Diderot, folks of that sort. Well, in the same sense, you could say that Buckley, his conservative enlightenment, his great innovation was to try to organize conservatism as if the Constitution didn't exist and as if it had nothing to do with how government would exercise its powers or the powers that government would have. If you start from the premise that in order to deal with some kind of a historic emergency, the government has to have totalitarian powers over the lives of American citizens, where can you go from there? But in the direction of building up that very totalitarian edifice in the name of supposedly defeating a totalitarian threat from abroad. And so in order to defeat the communists, Mr. Buckley's approach was to say that we should create our own version of totalitarian socialism. And there were many conservatives who said, well, I think we can do a little bit better than that. And so Buckley spent the first 15 to 20 years of his career as the establishment anointed pontiff of conservatism, issuing writs of excommunication, expelling from the ranks of polite conservatism people like Murray Rothbard and Ayn Rand and of course Robert Welch and the John Birch Society as apostates from this new order of totalitarian conservatism. And unfortunately, it's Buckley's vision of conservatism that prevails today, as I think it was intended to.
I think you're absolutely right, and it's interesting how similarly we feel, even though we hadn't had a chance to discuss this before. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with William Grigg, and but you're not going to hear this discussed, as Sidney Rush Limbaugh spent the first hour of his program today. Extolling the virtues of William Buckley, who, according to Rush Limbaugh, was really his mentor and taught him what he knew about conservatism, made him the conservative he is today. And as I always like to say, Rush is the best conservative that money could buy. We'll be right back.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget, and more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. That's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2234 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
Are the ancient prophecies being fulfilled? Are we living in the end times? Why do the Muslim nations want to destroy Israel, and why is the United States selling sophisticated military weapons to Saudi Arabia and the other Muslim countries? Why is the incidence of UFO sightings increasing, and why is that important? Well, you'll find the answer to those and many other questions in Lynn Marzulli's exciting book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, because the book discusses the ancient prophecies and the supernatural forces directing the course of world events today. You can purchase Lynn's book at www.spiraloflife.com. That's spiraloflife.com. And if you read Lynn's book, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is William Grigg. And William, go right ahead.
Buckley.
William, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you certainly go right ahead.
When you talk about Mr. Buckley's influence on the media, it's important to point out that a lot of his influence has to do with a program that he started back in the mid-60s called Firing Line. And I think that this is a really good illustration of the post-constitutional nature of Mr. Buckley's conservatism. Firing Line was produced through and broadcast by the public broadcasting system, PBS. Public broadcasting is not a constitutionally authorized function of the federal government. You really don't have any constitutional provision that permits the government of the United States, the federal government, to create a taxpayer-subsidized foundation for the purpose of doing public broadcasting. It's constitutionally impermissible. It is completely unnecessary, particularly now when we have such a profusion of media outlets. And yet Mr. Buckley is the supposed, as the supposed doyen of conservatism, made his big mark on the public by means of this public broadcasting television program called Firing Line. It's also interesting when you take a look at what he occupied his time with. During the last couple of decades of his life, he was at his best a very good columnist, but by no means the best in that field. If you take a look at some of the columnists who are writing today, some of them have gone through Mr. Buckley's sphere of influence. I think the finest political journalist of our time as an essayist, not as a reporter, but as an essayist, is Joseph Sobran. And Sobran was fired by National Review back in, I think it was 1991 or 92, and the chief bone of contention between Sobran and Buckley was Mr. Sobran's opposition to the first Gulf War. There were a number of accusations leveled at Joseph Sobran that he was an anti-Semite, that he hates Jewish people and wanted various forms of harm to come to people as Jews because they were Jews. None of that's true. None of it's ever been demonstrated to the satisfaction of rational people. And Mr. Sobran bears no individual any ill will that I can think of. I've had the pleasure of meeting with him on a couple of occasions and talking with him extensively, and I found that he's a genuine Christian gentleman. And nonetheless, because of his opposition to the first Gulf War, he eventually lost his job there at National Review. He was a far better writer than Mr. Buckley as a columnist. But when Buckley was on his game, he was a good and diverting columnist. He was a speaker, a debater, somebody who spent a lot of time every year crisscrossing the country delivering speeches. But during the last 10 or 15 or 20 years of his life, what occupied most of his time was writing novels. And what I thought was really interesting is that toward the end of his career as a novelist, I think he finished his last novel a couple of years ago, Buckley wrote a series of revisionist treatments of various historical events. He wrote a novel about the Nuremberg trials, for instance, that wasn't half bad. Of Buckley's novels, I think that was probably the best of them. He wrote a book that was a revisionist treatment of Joseph McCarthy that was completely irresponsible. Given the fact that he started out his career as a conservative defending McCarthy, he ended his career assailing McCarthy. And the facts hadn't changed in the interim. What had changed, I think, was Mr. Buckley's priorities or the mission that was assigned to him. I don't know which is true, but it could be one, it could be both. But McCarthy was somebody who has been vindicated in almost every of the public charges that he made. He did nothing exceptional in terms of the use of the subcommittee he headed up in the Senate. The one thing that I would say, actually there are two things I'd say by way of criticizing McCarthy, the first of which is that his voting record was really liberal. He was a big supporter of agricultural subsidies, particularly for the dairy industry. He was from Wisconsin, after all. And the second one was that he didn't understand the wisdom expressed by Frank Shadorov with respect to the communist infestation of the public bureaucracy. What Shadorov said was that if you find a bureaucracy full of communists, you do away with the bureaucracy. And that never occurred to Mr. McCarthy, unfortunately. But Buckley started out defending McCarthy in the 1950s. By the 1990s, he had joined the chorus condemning McCarthy. And then he wrote another book, the title of which I won't name, that was basically his revenge, I guess you would say, against the John Birch Society for the crime of surviving Buckley's attempt to kill it back in the 1960s. And as a novelist, of course, Mr. Buckley controlled every element of the universe he was creating. And by appending the apparatus of scholarship to some of his novels, such as footnotes and endnotes and various types of scholarly affectations, Mr. Buckley wanted his novels to be taken as, if you will, sort of a Romana Clef, sort of a treatment of history that's to be taken as a sober and credible recreation of what happened, as opposed to the eccentric views of somebody with definite personal interests at stake.
Well, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with William
right.
Grigg, and I think it's important that we understand that certainly Mr. Buckley was one of the leaders of the conservative movement. But, of course, the tragedy is so many of the leaders of the conservative movement are not conservatives at all. They're part of the establishment, leading us to our own destruction. We'll be right back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Torme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. 1126, or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and with us is William Grigg. And before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog and how they can get your book.
Well, with respect to the latter, I've been in touch with, once again, my associates at the Wells Foundation, and I'm confident that this week you should be getting the books to carry there at Radio Liberty after a long and unfortunate delay that I suppose reflects as much on my own rather cluttered schedule as any other factor. And with respect to my blog is entitled Pro Libertate. That's a Latin phrase that means for freedom. And if you want to go to it directly, you go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Once again, it's one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you could go to the website maintained by the Wells Foundation, a news portal called The Right Source, And the address there is a lot easier to remember, I think, www.rightsourceonline.com. That's once again one word, rightsourceonline.com. And if you go to that front page of the Right Source from the Welsh Foundation, at the top of the page you'll find a banner advertisement for my new book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can order it there by way of PayPal directly from the Welsh Foundation. And if you want to find my blog, just scroll down about a third of the way down the page. Look at the left-hand border of your screen. You'll see my photograph, and there'll be a hyperlink which will take you to my blog, Pro Libertate.
Okay, very good. And I'll tell you, it's an excellent blog. In fact, I don't know whether you know, William, but certainly I go every morning to the World Affairs Brief put up by good friend Joel Skousen. And I noticed that he's been carrying a lot of your blog articles.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
So, you know, so it's getting a lot of coverage that way.
Well, terrific. I'm honored to know that that's the case. Well, with respect to Mr. Buckley again, I had been mentioning previous to the break that we have a series of books that were put out just in the last 10 or 12 years, novels written by Mr. Buckley that were sort of revisionist takes on various historical personalities and developments. And I'd mentioned his last novel of consequence, which is entitled Getting It Right. And Getting It Right was meant to be a work of history. As a matter of fact, I'd mentioned Sam Tannenhaus before. Mr. Tannenhaus is a friend of Mr. Buckley's, and he's working on a biography of Buckley that will be published later this year. Tannenhaus has written a great deal about the Alger Hiss-Whitaker Chambers confrontation. And he wrote a blurb, that is to say, a jacket endorsement for the book Getting It Right, in which he described this novel, this is a work of fiction, remember, as, and I'm quoting now, a major contribution to the historiography of post-war American conservatism. And then Tannenhaus talked about how Buckley dealt with what he called the emergence of, quote, two symmetrical extremist forces depicted vividly here in the characters of Robert Welch and Ayn Rand. Tannenhaus said that the what he described as the unintended interlocking collaboration between the JBS, the John Birch Society, and libertarianism as inspired by Ayn Rand looked for a time as if it might pitch the right into permanent oblivion. Instead, the crisis was met and mastered into a mature, nuanced conservative movement. Now, that's pretty much how Mr. Buckley wants to be remembered. You know, he was the savior of respectable conservatism by banishing to the hinterlands everybody who didn't accept the idea that government should have totalitarian powers to protect us from foreign enemies of its own creation. And that means, of course, that to the hinterlands, to the so-called fever swamps, must go such people as the libertarians of every stripe, whether they're people who are primarily inspired by Murray Rothbard or people who follow Ayn Rand, people who look to Robert Welch and his insights regarding the power elite running our country and the moral values that we have to uphold in order to have ordered liberty. You know, people like that have to be pitched out to the wastelands as well, because they believe that a lot of what's going on in current events reflect the machinations of people in our own government who are seeking to accumulate power through conspiratorial means. And that's, of course, a perspective on American government that's at least as old as the 1700s. If you go back and read what the American colonists were saying about not only the British government, but also the people who were presiding over the colonies, who were colonial governors and so forth. I mean, they had pretty much the same suspicions and the same justified misgivings about their government that contemporary conservatives of, if you will, the Birchite stripe have to say about the government that rules us right now. But people of that sort had to be cast out as well, because you had to have a more mature and nuanced understanding of what's going on, which means that, for instance, if we see our government through the CIA funding socialist movements in places like Italy and Yugoslavia and other places in war-torn post-World War II Europe, well, that's something that we just have to do, because you have to understand these people really understand the elaborate bank shots that are necessary in order to defeat communism. And sometimes that means you have to go out and fund Marxist groups. You know? And sometimes you have to go out and fund radical anti-American Muslim forces in Afghanistan and elsewhere. in order to fight the Soviet Union. You have to go out and find exactly the worst and most envenomed critics of the United States in order to do that, and cultivate those elements in order to bring about the triumph in the Cold War. And that's how we ended up with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. You know, that was something brought to us by Mr. Buckley's friends, the CIA. And then the other novel I think is worth mentioning here in this context, another attempt by Mr. Buckley to use a novel to recast history in a way congenial to his point of view, was called Spy Hunter, which was about James Jesus Angleton, and that is how his name was pronounced. It wasn't pronounced Jesus. And Mr. Angleton, as it happens, was from Boise, Idaho, which is only about 45 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And he was the head of counterintelligence at the CIA. And he was controversial for his assumption, his belief, that the primary thrust of the KGB, the Soviet Intelligence Service, was strategic deception as opposed to active intelligence. That it was trying to use a feedback mechanism within our own government to manipulate public opinion in a way that would eventually bring about a merger between the United States and the Soviet Union on communist terms. And the reason why Mr. Angleton was so adamant about this was because he was the one who debriefed Anatoly Golitsyn, who defected to the United States in 1961, and Mr. Golitsyn had been involved in planning this campaign of strategic deception. Now, most of the predictions, I mean, something on the order of 67 or 70%, if I remember correctly, made by Mr. Golitsyn have been vindicated, have been validated. And Mr. Golitsyn, knowing Mr. Buckley's background in the CIA, went to Buckley in the 1970s with a draft of his book, New Lies for Old. And Buckley, of course, threw him out of his living room in Sharon, Connecticut, because he didn't want to have, Sharon, Connecticut. He was in Connecticut in any case. Mr. Buckley threw him out of his living room because Golitsyn had the thesis that this great liberalization in the former Soviet Union was essentially a vast charade, that the same people would retain power in the Soviet Union, and that the eventual result of this staged phony collapse of the Soviet Union would be a merger between the United States and post-Soviet Russia on terms favorable to socialism. And he was saying all these things in the late 70s and early 80s when the supposed liberalizer was Yuri Andropov, the former head of the KGB. And now we have post-Soviet Russia under Vladimir Putin, who's another former head of the KGB or former high-ranking officer in the KGB. And you see how they're considered strategic partners of the United States, in spite of the fact that the same people are running Russia today that were running it when it was the Soviet Union 15 or 16 years ago. And Buckley, of course, was given the opportunity, because Golitsyn didn't fully understand who Buckley was and what his true priorities were. Buckley was given the opportunity to spike for a while Mr. Golitsyn's expose of what the KGB was really up to. And so I think that is, once again, a very important illustration of Mr. Buckley's true significance in terms of his intelligence background, but also the fact that he went out of his way to write a novel so as to get the last word and to recast history in a way that would make him the hero and make those he was collaborating to suppress into the villains. I think that tells you something about Mr. Buckley's personality and about the kind of a person he really was. I know we're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but when you've lived a life as public and as conspicuous as Mr. Buckley and made such a habit of using obituaries in order to get your last digs in at somebody who's had a long-standing argument with you, I think there's a different standard that applies here in composing our own eulogies for the man.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think that it's important that people understand that he was playing a part, and this is these people affiliated with the CIA, but it's not simply the CIA, because the CIA merges with the CFR, with the with the skull and bones, with this whole world occult movement. And until people really understand the spiritual forces that are manipulating the CIA and the CFR and the skull and bones, and understand the CFR is simply a front for a group known as the Round Table, which was a front for the Association of Helpers, which was a front for a Cecil Rhodes secret society created back in 1891. We know it was created because one of the people who was there actually came forward and admitted what it was all about in his diary and in his writings. And so there's no question exactly what happened. And Professor Quigley tells us so much of that in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. But, of course, there is other material out there which we have, which we've accumulated through the years. And, of course, there was a secret society. It was dedicated to creating a world government. And, of course, as you begin to see who was in it, these people were all affiliated with the occult. So go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Buckley's connections to the CFR at the time of his death were decades old, and the fact that he'd been involved in the Skull and Bones, the Order of Skull and Bones, is also important, because the Skull and Bones has to be considered an occultic group. But one of the things that you find in Buckley's career is that he always had a way of taking really outre leftist propositions and finding some way of translating them into an idiom that would make them acceptable to rank-and-file conservatives. For instance, with respect to the United Nations, way back in the early 1960s, after National Review got started, when the John Birch Society got started in 1958, and some other organizations were criticizing the United Nations as being effectively a communist front and suggesting that the United States should get out of the United Nations, what Mr. Buckley did was he made a great show of embracing the anger, the angry reaction to the United Nations, and embracing those who were angered by what the United Nations was doing, and talking about all these horrible things that the UN was doing, while at the same time saying that, well, we are not anti-UN as such, we're opposed to the perversion of the United Nations into a communist instrument, and what we do support is the United Nations as it was intended to work originally. You know, he found some way of saying that the United Nations could somehow be turned into an instrument of sound American policy. And I guess from his perspective, he could say he was being honest, because once again, if his opening bid is totalitarianism, then there's really no other place to go. But that's a really good example of how Buckley controlled the dialectic, or used the dialectic to control the public conversation about certain issues. And then by the early 1970s, he was appointed by Nixon, I think, to be part of the U.S. delegation to the United Nations. You see that happening time and time again with various subjects. With respect to the issue of forced desegregation of the South, many conservatives opposed the use of federal power forcibly to desegregate the South. Many people who were appalled by the treatment of black citizens in the various states when they were being treated as second-class citizens, and impediments were being thrown up to prevent them from voting or from conducting various types of economic transactions. And they said, no, this simply cannot work, and we have, you know, these things have to be changed. People of good faith have to use whatever moral suasion, moral force they have to compel these people to change. But you can't use the federal government to intervene, because the federal system does not permit Washington to intervene to rearrange the various institutions in these states. And that's a very important issue with respect to the reserved rights of the states under the Constitution. Now, Mr. Buckley made a point of embracing that policy for 4 or 5 years, then he turned on a dime, and he came out in favor of a whole host of federal interventions within the states, found a way of justifying this, rather than being a matter of expediency, justifying this as being part of this mature and nuanced conservatism that Tannen House extols. And then by the 1980s, he was talking about how conservatives really ought to embrace the message of Martin Luther King and extol Martin Luther King as an exemplar of the best American values, rather than having proper reservations about the role that Martin Luther King, whatever you think of the man as an individual, the role that he played in destroying federalism, which is the real issue that most conservatives have against Martin Luther King. It wasn't the man himself so much as the role that he played in abetting the federal intrusion into the reserved powers of the states, and we're left now with this legacy of so-called civil rights laws that effectively federalized the entire criminal code and the entire regulatory apparatus of the country. And Buckley played a role once again in setting the dials and tuning the conversational atmosphere to make this triumph of the unitary state possible.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting. What he would do is he would take a position that everybody would agree with. Uh-huh. And then everybody would fall in step behind him because he was leading the way. And then, of course, when he turned, as you say, on a dime and suddenly going the other direction, Everybody dutifully followed him. This is a standard technique. It's been used over and over again. It's like Ronald Reagan, you know, who's totally against, you know, big government and high taxes and large deficits. I mean, he was totally against all of those things. And he said everything we believed, but look at his record. He gave us the biggest tax increase in history. Mm-hmm. He gave us the biggest deficits in history. You know, he expanded the government more than anybody else had ever done before that. And but because we all loved Ronald Reagan, we went right along with it.
Yeah, and in addition to those venisons that Mr. Reagan conferred upon our republic, or what's left of our republic, we also have a couple of little Easter eggs that we had to open up a little bit later, such as, of course, the radical Islamic movement that was nurtured by the CIA under Ronald Reagan's watch in Afghanistan and elsewhere, that's now being used, of course, as this totemic evil that is being employed to rally the country behind another round of totalitarian centralization of power here in the United States. You know, Mr. Reagan was probably the most prominent subscriber to the National Review in the 1970s and 1980s, and when they had their 50th anniversary, no, it wasn't the 50th, their 30th anniversary back in 1985, 1986, Reagan was the keynote speaker there. And he talked about how Bill Buckley was his guiding intellectual light, in the same way that Rush Limbaugh today was talking about Bill Buckley as his mentor, taught him everything that he needed to know about being a conservative media personality. I think they're being exactly right. They're being completely candid in describing Mr. Buckley that way. Mr. Buckley was the first celebrity conservative, and now the country is lousy with celebrity conservatives. Almost all of them extolling the principle of the Republican Party, Uber Allah, and talking about the accumulation of power.
At a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you place them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 psi, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Iowa to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
The Healing Formula is an all-natural wound care formula developed mainly for the treatment of pressure sores, also called COM, or call 800-357-2944. That's 800-357-2944.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I always enjoy William. I had no idea this what we're going to be talking about this hour, but I think it was very apropos. You have to understand that the invisible government, the spiritual hierarchy, is really, they're awfully smart. So they create the conservative, liberal, right, left. Alder North was working on a plan to suspend the Constitution and round up Americans and put them into concentration camps. And, of course, we have that footage elsewhere in the amazing clips or in the sampler available from Radio Liberty. You can see that we have a four-tape set of Canadian troops in the United States to police us. You know that they can bring their professional mercenaries, their hired killers, into America to police us in case there's civilian unrest. Do you know that they're really all throughout the world, they're growing food shortages, and the United Nations even talk about the necessity of rationing? There's going to be civilian unrest. They're planning on it. They'll be fomenting this. Believe me, they'll be doing everything they can to get the people out rioting so that they can justify rounding people up and putting them into concentration camps. Let me suggest, like a free catalog, we'll be glad to send it to you. Or you can get a free catalog or a health catalog or an emergency food catalog, and you better start stocking up, because believe me, the price of of grains and all the things and the fruits and the dried eggs and the milk and dairy products, all the things you're going to need to survive, they're all going up. They're getting increasingly difficult to get for the people around.
Magnet onward into delicious crystal clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon 222, unwanted metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
At Ringing in the News, behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff. This really, of course, covers so much of the what's happening historically, what's happening today politically. But then how does it fit into prophecy, and what part does the supernatural play in all of this? Most Americans are so sophisticated, we don't believe in the supernatural. We have studied physics and chemistry, and there's certain laws having to do with astronomy and music and mathematics, and everything just fits into those laws. But is there a realm where people can violate these laws, or forces can violate these laws, or supernatural powers can violate the laws of physics? And how could that be? Well, of course, I'm going to let Lynn pick up the story. And Lynn, I want you to know that this is a completely different audience than we had last night, so feel free to repeat exactly what you said last night.
I've been ordering books and asked some questions, and it's just been a kind of a very interesting day. But yes, to get back on track here, the supernatural is all around us. I subscribe to a weekly UFO update by a gentleman called George Fowler. He's a retired Air Force guy. And he serves sort of like a clearinghouse. People from all over the world now send him sightings. And I realize that some of our listeners who are hearing me start off the show by mentioning UFOs may be taken aback by that, and I understand that. But what we need to realize is that this thing is not going away. It's not just, you know, happening in some little hick town in the South or whatever where some illiterate farmers, and I mean this with all due respect, see this thing and don't know what it is, and it turns out to be a helicopter or something. These reports are burgeoning. They're happening globally, all over the world. The most famous one, at least the most recent famous one, is the one in Texas, the Stephenville sighting, which is just an incredible flap. By the way, in Stephenville, did receive my book. The first one that we overnighted to him never got to his address. This book did. And so after he reads it, hopefully we'll get together and I'll be able to interview this gentleman and get some more in-depth detail of what the sighting was and what he's looking at. But getting back on track, there's over 5,000 UFO sightings that are really reported per year, estimated by Mr. Fowler, at least another 5,000 which go unreported. So in other words, this phenomena, which is happening, if you do the math, 365 in the 5,000, it's happening daily. And it's not going away. In fact, this last article that I received from George had just an unbelievable photo taken of a UFO. These guys were on a raft trip up in Oregon, and as they were coming around a bend, the guide said, "Gee, what's that?" And they looked over, and they took like several pictures of this. And
he's a very reliable individual. He's told me many times about her experience of seeing a craft of this sort. Hanging in the sky for half an hour, until a small sister ship came out, a daughter ship or whatever, and then, of course, sped away. But there's no question at all that there is a supernatural element out there. And what we need to do is get the Christians to begin to understand. They're not being told what's going on, or we're being misled on really so many things, because unless you understand the relationship between prophecy and the supernatural and the unfolding events that we're seeing, why so much of what's going on today really doesn't make sense. We're going to be back in just a moment with Lynn Marzulli. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Lynn Maizuli, and we're going to be talking about his book, Politics Prophecy. The other audience that heard you just 2 minutes ago won't be back for two more minutes, 2.5 minutes. Okay. So go ahead. If you want to be a little repetitive, go right ahead.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. Recently, there's been UFO sightings, specifically in the United States, in a little town in Texas called Stevensville. And this UFO flap is pretty incredible. I actually spoke to one of the witnesses and called him again this morning. I sent him my book when this first happened, and he never received it. And we overnighted it him Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. We overnighted it to him, and he never received it. So we resent it again, this time to another address. This time he did see it.
Well, I think what's so interesting about this gentleman is he's been threatened. He's been told to be quiet. Everything's been done to silence him so he won't be talking about this. Who would be trying to prevent him from talking about what he's seen? And not only he, but a number of other people there in the community have seen it. Who is it who tries to suppress the information?
Yeah, it's really funny. Like in the 50s, the government could, according to the Roswell legend or some of the work, the great work by Dr. Stan Freeman, and the witnesses were told that if they said anything, and these are most of them were deathbed confessions, or these people finally in their old age, you know, in their 70s or 80s, it's been bothering them, and they've held this thing for over 50 years, and now they've decided to come forward with a testimony. But they all have the same sort of a story, where they were either threatened by military personnel, or they signed some sort of a non-disclosure agreement, agreeing that they would never say anything of this. About this to anyone because it violated national security. So, but see, that's back in the 50s when most people really trusted the government, and it was like, you know, you just didn't mess with that. Well, everything's changed. I mean, I could even point to the Kennedy assassination as the moment in time where everything changed. And then, of course, certainly not they appear to be. And most people today have a certain distrust. So even though he's the government of our government, unfortunately. So this gentleman in Stevensville said that there were black helicopters flying over his house. I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago, and his phone was definitely tapped, in my opinion. This was clicking. Not can you hear these clicks? And I've only heard that one other time.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Lynn Mazzola. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Lynn is talking about this gentleman down there in Texas who saw this spacecraft. But a number of people have seen it, but he's been getting a lot of threatening telephone calls, and it's very obvious that his telephone is tapped. And then in come the black helicopters. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you may not believe in black helicopters, but I know a number of my friends who have done. The administration came out in 94, and they were sending black helicopters to him regularly, you know, to intimidate him. Certainly one of our good friends lives across the county in Watsonville, and she, because she was doing a lot of talking, they sent a black helicopter hovering right so they could look right in the windows that her children were at home and trying to intimidate them. Probably know she wasn't at home at the time, but fortunately, the children, you know, were able to identify the type of helicopter. We put it out on the radio, and the black helicopter visit stopped because the last thing they want is for the American people to realize that they use them for intimidation. But who are they, and what's it all about? So, Lynn, you pick up the story.
Well, it's interesting that he certainly has been harassed, this gentleman in Stevensville. His whole family came down with a cold, and so he's been kind of in the house and hasn't really gone out and done anything. And I asked him about things, he quieted down a little bit. So that's kind of interesting. But back on point, I believe that the government is suppressing this, and it's suppressing it for a variety of reasons. Certainly at the forefront of those reasons would be the theological, religious implications if these things ever did reveal themselves. And, of course, in my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, I get into this. And the subtitle of that book, The Experian Endgame, this revealing that I believe we're going to see, and I believe, of course, this what triggers that revealing is the fulfillment of the Ezekiel 38-39 prophecy in Israel. And, of course, I mean, I'm jumping topics here, but I believe that when that war happens, when that Confederacy of Nations go up against the land of unwalled villages, i.e. Israel, that this will trigger the supernatural, and we will see the revealing. Remember, Jesus himself tells us that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. And then Paul warns us in 2 Thessalonians that Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. And, you know, try to find something a little more pleasant. But the bottom line is, you know, these are the words of Jesus himself, that even the elect would be deceived if that possible. So whatever is coming on this planet is so intense that Jesus, later on in that same chapter, says that men will be fainting from fear of things coming on the earth. And you can look that up in a lot of different translations, and it's on the earth, celestial bodies and the waves, you know, tossing and turning. So it's a very, very grave warning that Jesus himself gives us. And it's, I believe that it's just not ink on the page to, and I don't believe he's talking idly. I believe that he's giving us a warning of the end days, of the last days, and I believe we're in those days, and we're certainly seeing the rise of Islamic jihadists, which are going to go up against the land of unwalled villages, which may fulfill that Ezekiel 39:38 prophecy, which we talked about before. But the supernatural is manifesting, and it's manifesting in just bizarre. A three-mile-wide UFO began to hover over not only one city, but let's say 20 to 30 cities, sort of an Independence Day scenario. But instead of, like, blowing us out of water or waging war, that's not the case. What the revealing will be, hey, you have to stop this war stuff that you guys are doing, because we created you and genetically manipulated you from primitive man years ago.
Well, of course, that really isn't necessarily true, but that's what they're going to try to get us to believe.
Correct. And it's interesting that those of us who have traveled in this and studied this often come to the same conclusions without any collusion between us. One man wrote this book, Lying Wonders. He's now deceased. Kaminsky is his name. And he came up with the same, he reached the same conclusions that I did, the same scenario that I did, that this will be the coming great deception, all signs and lying wonders, and this will be it. And, you know, it's interesting, when a person sees something, you know, some of his comments, let me turn to my notes here, which I think we've talked about a little bit before, Dr. Stan, but I think it's worth, you know, saying again that one of his quotes is the blinders were taken off, and that he's still trying to figure out how to deal with what he's seen. So it's like when a person sees a craft like this, and according to this gentleman, it was this is big, big craft. When you see something like this, it's just so awe-inspiring that it can radically change your worldview. And of course, I think we've talked about the Fatima apparitions and the so-called miracle of the sun. And with all due respect to Catholics, I don't believe that the Fatima apparitions were the Mary of the Bible. I believe it was a harbinger of the coming deception, sort of a dry run, if you will, of the kind of stuff that we're going to be looking at and that we're going to be seeing in these last days. And, you know, certainly the Roswell incident's interesting, but there's also major UFO flaps over Washington in the 50s. And then, you know, there's a kook or weird or a nutcase, and people would scoff and laugh. However, in the last couple of decades, that has changed to the point where at least now the press is beginning to look at it and treat it somewhat seriously. For instance, Larry King had a panel on his show discussing the Stevensville UFO flap. So it's not a first, but it's kind of a new, he's running with this. Usually they go little green men and they just make light of it and just spoof the whole thing, where at least the media is beginning to, it seems like anyway, treat it with a little more respect than it deserves. I mean, this is, if it's true that that these things are out there, this literally is the story of the century.
But, of course, the thing is, if you then accept that they're there, then the next thing is, well, they're aliens from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
They're from another galaxy, from another solar system, and that's what they want us to believe. In other words, they don't want, of course, to let people understand that these are manifestations as supernatural events have been happening for thousands of years. They happened at the time of our Lord. And of course, one of the points you make so well, you know, how can any Christian doubt the supernatural? What could be more supernatural than Jesus Christ being born of a virgin? Jesus Christ being crucified and dying and resurrecting? Appearing in a locked room where the disciples were all huddled because they were frightened to death. The Romans were going to come after them. And they're in this locked room and Jesus materializes. I mean, if we believe the Bible is what it says it is, and I happen to believe it and accept it as truth, then these are all supernatural events, aren't they?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. And the Bible, if you were to remove the supernatural events out of the Bible, you'd have over half of it would be gone, because when you really look at it, it's a series of supernatural events that are impacting, and that's what we see. Yeah, there's instruction. Yeah, there's you know, different ideas when you get to the Book of Kings and things like that. But even in the Book of Kings, there's like all sorts of supernatural events that are happening. I mean, all the way through the Bible, it is the supernatural interfacing with our three-dimensional space-time continuum. And that sounds, you know, real scientific, but that's really what it is, that the supernatural somehow is interfacing. Of course, Paul warns us that at the end, the latter days, that when the enemy comes, when Lucifer, when Satan manifests himself, he will come with all signs and lying wonders. Now, again, you know, we've talked about this before, but the church specifically needs to understand that what is coming is not fun and games, that the enemy hates us. Our adversary hates us. And he would like to, I had a pastor once say that he would like to do to all of us what he did to Jesus, and that's exactly what he wants to do. He wants to, if he can, crucify us and kill us in any way he possibly can. And so the deception that's coming aren't paired for what is coming. And the whole point of writing Politics, Prophecy, and Supernatural was to link these three seemingly odd bedfellows together. And I think I've done that. I've connected some dots, which other authors haven't. You know, other authors talk about the political machinations and how certain, you know, political agendas may be fulfilling prophecy, and I do that here too, and tie the political into the particularly concerning Israel and what is happening with the radical jihadists in the Middle East, and how Israel is now literally surrounded pretty much by to say antagonistic is an understatement. I mean, these people want to annihilate Israel and kill every Jew on the planet. I mean, that's what they want to do.
Well,
so
we want to just touch on, which I thought was so interesting last night, the prophecies of Ezekiel 38 and 39, because, you know, if anybody has really read and studied these, we see those prophecies, these ancient prophecies written probably 2,500 years or so ago, coming 2,500 years ago, the things that they were talking about that they could never have known, that we would have atomic weapons and that sort of things today. But could you pick that story, because I think it's so vitally important to understanding what is really going on today and where we fit into this scenario.
I love you, Dr. Stan. The whole idea of the Ezekiel 38 prophecy really stems from the fulfillment of Ezekiel. It basically is, if you just read it, for what it says, it talks about the regathering of Israel from all the nations of the world and regathering it into its ancient homeland of Israel. And of course, Israel, the history, the backstory is simply this, that Israel was a nation until AD 70, when Titus and the Roman legions came in and laid siege to the city, which was well over a year. And after they broke into the city, they destroyed about 1 million inhabitants. They tore down the ancient temple. Not one stone was left upon another, which fulfills Jesus' prophecy. And the Jews were scattered throughout the world.
The Jews would return to the Holy Land. Now, this is the most amazing thing. No other nation has ever been reconstituted after almost 2,000 years. And a lot of people will say, well, but a lot of the Jews aren't. They're atheist Jews. They're not really a traditional Jews, and that's absolutely true. But they're there, and they're there for a purpose. And if you study how they've been able to survive 1948, it truly is miraculous. And well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Lynn. This is a fascinating book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And we'll be back in a few minutes to tell you a little bit about how to get hold of it. Well, Lynn, you go right ahead.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. So we know that the Jews were then scattered throughout the ancient world, and they were there was another rebellion around AD 120. I think that's Bar Kochba who did that. And then the Romans had it at that point, and that was it. I mean, they came in and they banished every Jew under pain of death from even and Constantine came in and finally allowed some Jews to come back into the homeland. So we see that there's literally well over 100 years where no Jew at all can set foot in Jerusalem. And at that time, the Romans came in and completely rebuilt Jerusalem to the point that the Temple Mount that we see now is actually some of that is the remains of the old Roman fortress Antonia. So it's hard to say where the Holy is located. There are prophecy scholars that believe, and of course I'm jumping ahead here, a little bit of a rabbit trail, that the Dome of the Rock is not on the side of the Temple Mount, and that you could, you know, several acres to the, I think it's to the west, you could actually rebuild the new temple. And of course I believe this is going to happen. But getting back on point here with Ezekiel 37, the Jews now, after almost 2,000 years of diaspora being scattered throughout the nations of the world, are then, in 1947, they are brought back, literally, into the homeland after a plan, which I believe was completely luciferic in every way, totally deliberate plan to eliminate the Jews. And by doing that, you would eliminate prophecy. If you can kill every Jew on the planet, then the prophecy of Ezekiel 37 cannot ever come to pass because there's no Jew to bring it about. Instead, as usual, this unfortunately, this thing back, or fortunately, this thing backfired on the Luciferians, and we see this mass exodus from all over the world. In 1947, the nation founded and actually voted in by one vote into the United Nations and becomes a country. The Arabs call this the Day of Catastrophe, meaning that that at this moment in time, it was like, how can you possibly do this? What's interesting is the 800,000 Jews that were living in the Arab countries when this happened, they immediately fled those Arab countries and fled to Israel. And the 600,000 or 400,000 Palestinians who were in Israel at the time were told by the Arabs and the Muslim neighbors to leave your homes, and once we clear out the Jews and beat them in this war, then we'll resettle you. It's crazy. You really have to understand how Israel became a nation and the fact that Jordan is really a Palestinian state. It's over 75% of the population, I believe, are Palestinian. So what we see is a regathering of Israel into its ancient homeland. And then, of course, we see them capture the old city of Jerusalem, especially when Jesus says that Jerusalem will be trodden by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is over. To me, the prophetic clock starts ticking in 65, when that war took place, and the Israeli army came in and actually set foot for the first time in thousands of years on the Temple Mount and took control of the old city, thus ending the time of the Gentiles. And I realize people can argue, well, the Temple Mount is still controlled by the Muslims. Yeah, but Jerusalem isn't. And the only reason why they are is because the Israelis gave the Temple Mount control back to the Muslims because the Dome of the Rock was there. And they realized over a billion angry Muslims stormed the gates of Jerusalem to try to take back that sacred site. So we see the fulfillment in Ezekiel 37 that Israel is now regathered into its homeland. Well, what's sobering is after chapter 37 comes chapters 38 and 39.
All right, I want you to hold up because we're going to be bringing our stations all back on board right about now. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Lynn has been talking about the prophecies that brought Israel back to their homeland, and then, of course, taking control of the city of Jerusalem, not necessarily of Temple Mount, because that is still under the control of the Muslims, but Jesus' prophecy that, you know, the Gentiles would occupy, you know, the Jerusalem until the 8 days of the Gentiles were over, and then, of course, the time clock, the prophetic time clock, began clicking or ticking of Ezekiel 38 and 39. So pick the story up there, Lynn.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. Well, Ezekiel 38 and 39 speaks of a confederacy of nations would come up against a land of unwalled villages. The first thing, we talked about this in detail, Dr. Stan, last night, but since this is a new audience, I'll launch into it again. In the ancient world, there was no such thing as a land of unwalled villages. That would be national suicide. First thing a person or a country did would build a city. They'd build the largest, highest, thickest, grandest wall, maybe surround it with a moat, and that was it. And you had this wall around the city, and your inhabitants would be protected from the city. And, of course, other warlords would attack the city, usually in the spring and summer, and try to break down the walls, kill your men, steal your women, steal your food, and use your children as slaves. So that's the ancient world. Unfortunately, it is as barbaric as it sounds, that's the ancient world. So the idea of a land of unwalled villages is completely unheard of. And what people need to realize is that this prophecy is written, land of unwalled villages wasn't heard of. So the prophet's looking at this, and he's amazed. And so he writes a land of unwalled villages. And this is precisely what we see in Israel today. It is a land of unwalled villages. And until the advent of the airplane, which, of course, in the last century, all warfare, you had a city, you'd fortify that city with the highest wall you possibly could, and that's how wars were fought. And until the advent of the airplane, which, of course, made a wall city obsolete, because now you don't need to go through the wall, you can just fly over them and drop a bomb. And so we see that the idea of a land of unwalled villages, although unheard of, 2,500 years ago when the prophet is writing this, has now come to complete fulfillment in what I believe are these last days. And the land of unwalled villages, of course, is Israel. This confederacy of nations, which comes up against Israel, is also listed, the prophets thus believe, as Russia. It also could be Turkey, could be the Caucasus, it could be a confederacy of the northern Islamic nations. But what's interesting, and this is very, very specific, the second nation listed is Persia. And Persia, as we all know, is modern-day Iran. And in fact, until the last half of the 20th century, has been called Persia, literally for thousands of years. And if you speak to any anyone from that area, most of the time they will say, I'm from Persia, especially if they're expatriates. So we see that the second nation is Iran. And again, before the advent of Israel, we wouldn't be having this discussion, Dr. Scan, because Iran was basically under the Ottoman Empire for centuries, and was kind of like a no-brainer, a no-threat. I mean, Iran certainly was no threat to the region. And we see until Israel came about that even then, you'd still say, well, you know, Iran's not a threat. However, in the last decade, Iran and from the that Iran has become increasingly antagonistic towards Israel. They've become very militaristic, and it's the second nation listed in the prophecy. When I'm all that to say, the stage is being set, in my opinion, for the Ezekiel 38-39 war to manifest. And we are looking at the machinations, the political machinations behind the scenes, which will then fulfill this Ezekiel 38-39 prophecy, where these confederacy of Muslim nations, and they will be Muslim nations, come up against this land of unwalled. And when you read Ezekiel 39, it gets very, very sobering, because what we see is it appears to be that the prophet 2,500 years ago is looking at what might be some sort of a nuclear exchange. In other words, when this Israel realizes, and I'm paraphrasing here, Israel realizes that there's no way it can win against this many people coming up against it, this huge land force, and it will use its neutron weapons. Not its atomic weapons, but its
neutron. Is it, if you read Ezekiel 38-39, it names nations, and although some of them have changed their names, some of them are still exactly the same innate names that they were 2,500 years ago. And you can see this whole alignment coming together, can't you? Lynn?
I'm sorry, Dr.
No, I was just saying that it's, really the prophecies, the nations that were described 2,500 years ago, all seem to be lies.
Absolutely. It's right there. And what amazes me that if Christians would spend more time in that prophecy and understand that these things are lining up and it looks like the stage is being set, it's very, very sobering.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment here to with our special guest, Lynn Mazzoli.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. Well, we've got this confederacy of nations, which the Bible speaks of in Ezekiel 38 and 39, coming up against the land of unwalled villages, i.e. Israel, and we see that the stage is being set now when you have the nut job over there in Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, threatening that Israel is soon to be plucked out. Israel is a dry, withered tree, soon to be plucked out by its roots. Talks about how evil the Zionist regime is. In fact, one of the underlings was comparing Israel that needed to be irradiated. I mean, these are not, I'm not making this stuff up. This is right from the wires and the different articles that I read. I mean, to say something like that, Israel is a cancer that needs to be irradiated. I mean, let's make no mistake about it that the vitriol that is flying around in the Middle East is just unbelievable. And it's the situation is volatile, and it's only a matter of time before these guys decide to terrorist, difficult name to pronounce. I think it's pronounced Mugnaya, but I could be wrong in that pronunciation. He was killed in a car bomb in Syria. And, of course, Hezbollah and the Syrians and Iran also, they're all shaking and say Israel did this. Now, Israel has denied, you know, any action in this particular instance. Whether or not that's true, I have no idea. But the response for this, of course, when they lose their terrorists, and this, make no mistake about it, this Mugnaya guy, first order. I mean, a major thug. Well, thank God in some ways that he's off the planet. We're all a little safer for it. But Hezbollah, which is being led by this guy Nasrallah, has declared open war with Israel, and so has Syria. So a lot of saber-rattling going on, and if you just look at a map, you see how small Israel is, and you see to the left the Gaza Strip on the west side of Israel, and the Gaza Strip now is being ruled by Hamas, which has sent literally over 3,000 missiles into the Israelis pulled out, and the missiles have not stopped, so there's constant harassment there. Hamas has vowed to destroy Israel. We see now in the north, Lebanon, in Lebanon, which, by the way, was a Christian nation, until the radical jihadists came in and they began to systematically kill Christians to the point where the Christians fled Lebanon and moved down into Israel. And this can be, if you want to document that or check a documentation, you can go to oh my God, I just, Rebiella, can't think of her last name, but she's an ex-Christian from Lebanon, and she writes about this. Just fascinating book. Why They Hate is the name of the book, so you can check that out.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lynn Marzulli. And before we go on, Lynn, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your website, how they can get your book, and I want you to put out the telephone number for them.
Sure. Spiral Staircase, or like the DNA spiral, spiraloflife.com, 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 or you can call at 310-457-5564, 310-457-5564.
One more time, slowly.
Okay, 310-457-5564.
All right, go right ahead. And of course, Lynn was simply talking about what's going on over there. Oh, and Nazarello, who is, of course, leads Hezbollah, which, of course, is really an Iranian terrorist organization that is operating openly in Lebanon. And they're threatening, of course, to go to war with Israel. Hamas is threatening to go to war with Israel. There's a lot of, growing hostility between Egypt and Israel. And everything points to the fact that there's going to be a war there. Now, one of the prophecies that's so interesting, totally destroyed. Yet Damascus, as Lynn has pointed out, is one of the oldest cities in the world. It's been there, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 years. It's never been destroyed. What are your thoughts about that, and how does that fit into what you're talking about and the coming fulfillment of prophecy?
Well, in Isaiah 17, it says very specifically that Damascus is no longer a city. It lays a ruinous heap. And, of course, we've never seen that. As you pointed out, Dr. Stan, it's the oldest inhabited city on the planet. And when Israel sent a sortie of planes in the tail end of 2007, I believe it was around September, October, and what they did is they struck what many believe was some sort of a nuclear cache that the Syrians had stored there, and the Israelis did like a preemptive strike and just knocked the thing out. What was interesting is directly after that sortie, a lot of saber rattling from Damascus. I mean, see, this is why this thing's going on. It's building. The pressure is when they finally, when the scales tip and things an all out war, and it will be crazy. I mean, the vitriol is just, the thing is just heating up. It's just like a pressure cooker. So the Israelis fly this sortie and they knock out this cache of nuclear material. And interestingly enough, several weeks later, they finally admit that, you know, the Israelis, that this is what we did. And the Syrians admit that, okay, we had this stuff here from the Koreans, I believe it was. And then the Israelis come back with a very, very interesting statement telling Damascus, and I'm quoting directly here, verbatim, telling Damascus that if you use chemical weapons, if you use chemical weapons against us, we will annihilate you. Not retaliate, no, annihilate you. So there's, I mean, it's like a major line in the sand. I mean, this is something that I would expect of former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but, you know, the fact that the Israelis annihilate you.
And of course, there is a very real threat that they have both chemical and biological warheads on the missiles. They've got all these sophisticated missiles they've gotten from Russia, and of course, we're doing everything we can to finance Russia. And we're still sending money to Russia, even though we have to borrow $2.5 billion a day just to pay our debts. We're still sending money to Russia under one guise or another. It doesn't make any sense. And, of course, we've given them the technology to build the missiles that now are aimed at Israel from Syria. So, and, of course, there's a great deal of evidence that they do have both the chemical and biological warheads. Many of them had come from Saddam Hussein and from his catch of weapons there, the weapons of mass destruction. So, really, there's a powder keg over there, and the only question is, when is the conflict going to come, and how will it then impact on us here in America? Because most Americans say, oh, that's too bad about those Israelis and too bad about all those. Do you believe it could affect us, Lynn?
Oh, I believe it will definitely affect us. In fact, in the book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, one of the scenarios that I postulate to the reader is the idea that it's a two-prong attack. And unfortunately, I believe it is a two-prong attack. I believe in the scenario. It's not, I just didn't write it to scare people. I believe that the scenario is very calculated, and I point to 9/11. I realize there are people that believe 9/11 was an inside job, and you know that I'm not going to get into that or argue that. All I'm saying is that radical is real. Like it or not, the radical jihadists are real. If they were manipulated for 9/11, that's another story. But radical jihad is very present, is very real. It's all over the planet. All we need to do is look at Eastern Europe to see. Look what's happening in Denmark. Look what's happening in France. Look what's happening in Spain with the car bombing. Look at Londonistan, which they call it now, Londonistan. And it's like, it's not going away. The southern border, terrorist attack. Fact. Okay, fact. And, you know, the citizens, we had the Minutemen that tried to patrol the border. Bush called them, you know, vigilantes. Excuse me. I mean, why isn't the federal government actually doing something to close the border? So we've had all this time, and the border has not been closed. Clinton could have closed the border, didn't close the border. Now he's got 20 million illegal aliens in the country, and not only that, who knows what has come up through the southern border. Drug trafficking comes through the porous southern border. Why allow it? I mean, if I were president, the first thing I would do is close the southern border, because that's where all the drugs are coming in, and it's real easy to get them across.
But, of course, what else could be coming in the way of major weapons? That would be the question that everybody should ask. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, and they really are terrorists who want to destroy us, could they possibly bring atomic weapons into this country?
Well, my about that, Dr. Stan, but I believe that between 2 and 20 suitcase nukes are already in place, and they will be used as dirty bombs. And can you imagine like a dirty bomb going off in Los Angeles, in the Hollywood area, let's say, and that's it. I mean, you can't go in there for a long time. It's contaminated. It's like Chernobyl, that type of a meltdown. It's not a Hiroshima bomb or a Nagasaki bomb where you get the mushroom cloud, but the radiation is all over the place, and you basically render that place inhabitable. And 20 suitcase nukes already in the country. It's a two-prong attack, and when they decide to go against Israel, they will go against us. Because remember, in the minds of the radical jihadists, the great Satan is America, and then slightly less is Israel. So we're the great Satan. Israel's the little Satan. That's how we're looked at in the eyes of radical jihad. And so I believe it will be a two-prong attack, and I believe, of course, when the Confederacy of Nations go up against Israel, this land of unwalled villages, it's in my opinion, this is my scenario, I believe will trigger the supernatural events that we talked about in the beginning of the program, specifically Jesus' own words, that even the elect will be deceived, think men standing for fear of what's coming on the earth. 2 Thessalonians, where Paul talked about Satan coming with all signs and lying wonders, and of course, that triggers the manifestation of the supernatural, which is, in my opinion, the revealing of the so-called extraterrestrial presence, which is more than literally a demonic ruse.
But you know, we see these supernatural phenomena of the so-called UFOs, you know, in the last few years for a time. They're there, and then they're gone, and then more recently they seem to be increasing in frequency of sighting. Is that a valid observation or not?
I think it's very valid. In fact, one of the studies that came across my desk, I think it was in September, there was a huge increase, almost a doubling increase in sightings from... maybe 100. All of a sudden, it spiked. In August, there were like over 600 sightings a month. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. What that means, I don't know. Can't tell you. It seems like they're becoming bolder. They're manifesting more. Certainly the Stevensville sighting, which is pretty much off the charts. And the witness I spoke to there, saw this thing up close and personal in his pasture, and his worldview was rocked and shattered. And, it goes back into what we talked about, of the miracle of the sun seen in 1917 by over 70,000 people in Fatima, Portugal. When you actually look at what the witnesses say they saw, they say over and over again, I looked up and saw a spinning disc. I saw a dull silver disc. I saw a disc. Disc, disc, disc. The word disc is used. Dull silver disc. What does it sound like? It sounds like a UFO. But perhaps if you and I were standing in that field, Dr. Stan, looking up, and knowing what we know, we'd say, oh my gosh, there's a UFO. And the enemy, the word UFO and flying saucer were not part of the Portuguese lexicon, so those terms weren't used, and people said silver disc, dull silver disc, which of course describes the modern of UFOs. But I say that to inform the audience that in 1917, when the 70,000 people saw the so-called miracle of the sun, their worldview was rocked, it was changed. And it's the same thing, you know, 2 Thessalonians talks about this great falling away that precedes the rise of the Antichrist. I truly believe that that's what we're going to be looking at, that this great falling away will happen, and I believe that the revealing of the extraterrestrial presence, so-called extraterrestrial presence, which is nothing more than the Luciferic endgame, is is the scenario which we will see. And it's most Christians, unless you're rooted and grounded in God's Word, one, but two, indwelled by the Holy Spirit, most people will be deceived, and they'll believe the lie.
Of course, conditioned to the day to believe whatever we're told. Well, of course, we're being told a lot of things that just aren't true, and anybody who talks about UFOs, if they're not ridiculed, if anybody is to believe this, then they're always aliens from outer space, from another dimension. But I don't believe that, nor does Lynn. I believe that they are manifestations of the supernatural dimension, and I think that anybody who has ever really studied these comes to exactly that conclusion, because they defy the laws of gravity and of physics. So could that happen? Well, it can't happen if they're from the same dimension in which we live. But, of course, certainly as you read the scriptures we're told over and over again, whether it be Deuteronomy or the New Testament, we are to avoid these manifestations from the other dimension, whether it be the diviners or whether it be the fortune tellers or whether it be those people who have supernatural power, mediums as they were. These people certainly do come in contact. So all of these seem to be coming together and sort of focusing right about this time. Isn't that true, Lynn?
I completely concur. It's the political stage is being set to fulfill the ancient prophetic, which then triggers the supernatural. And that's what we're looking at. And it's I really think I've connected some dots. And we've got the price as low as we can on the book. It's like $10 plus shipping and handling. So it's if I could give them away free, I would. But I think it's an important dot. And it really puts a whole package together, a whole worldview together. And it's easy to understand. There's over 25 footnotes at the back of the book, so everything is well-researched. If you've got a problem with something that I've written or referenced, you can look up the footnote and see for yourself where I'm drawing some of this stuff from.
Wait a minute. You said 25 footnotes. Isn't it 25 pages of
25
footnotes?
Pages.
25 pages, yeah. Of footnotes. That's a really, it's a very well-documented book.
25 pages of cross VT, so to speak, and that's what hopefully we've done with the book. So it's not exhaustive, and that's why I have the monthly newsletter, which is Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, and I discuss all the political machinations and how that dovetails into the prophetic, or how the prophetic may be fulfilled, and some of these things are starting to come. We see them inching their way closer to fulfillment, and then of course constant eye on the supernatural, not only UFOs but like the whole Mothman prophecy. For those of you who don't know what that is, that was a manifestation of some, which I believe was probably a fallen angel, in 66, 67 in a little town called Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and this thing was seen by well over 100 different witnesses on different occasions, and everyone who saw it was absolutely terrified. It was the man that I interviewed was actually a retired missionary, but at the time was studying to be a missionary, so he hadn't been. And those are his words, not mine. So, it's evil can manifest, and the enemy is wanting to do this. We're told in the Book of Revelation that the Antichrist will rise and create this one world government and this one world political system. And, we see that this is, in my opinion, this is exactly what's happening. And what event would be able to turn the worldview of 1.7 billion Christians and 1.2 billion Muslims, and, of course, the so-called extraterrestrial, which is nothing more than a demonic ruse, over the cities of the world? If you see that, you're going to have to kind of do a double take there, just like the gentleman that I interviewed in Stephenville. He's like trying to figure out how to deal with it. The blinders were taken off, and now he's trying to figure out how is he going to deal with this? What's his worldview? What is he really looking at? Which is why I sent him my book, because that's what the book talks about, and hopefully the coming great deception, or I should say the vanguard of the coming great deception.
And of course, one of the interesting things is that many of the people who've actually encountered these UFOs, if they've called upon the name and the blood of Jesus Christ, well, these things, of course, disappear. Or even some of the people who are going to be abducted. There have over 5,000 recorded abductions. But those Christians who understood and were filled with the Holy Spirit, they don't have anything to worry about them. This is the thing that we have to recognize. Most Christians are not prepared for that. What are your thoughts?
Well, I once again, Dr. Stan, we're on the same page together. It's, in my study with the abduction phenomena, that Christians who are abducted or begin to be abducted can stop the abduction by saying the blood of Jesus. I mean, people have gone on the record, saying very, very specifically that They looked over. They were a group of little gray aliens with the dark gray eyes that is now most Americans know exactly what they are. We've this the longest television series ever created, Taken. Steven Spielberg's Taken, which deals with the whole abduction phenomena. So we, you know, the America, the United States, and certainly the world has been enculturated into what these little grays are. But back on point here, the people who see this one gentleman who was being levitated in the air, again, a very supernatural occurrence, isn't it? And he screams out to Jesus. He yells out, "Jesus, help me." And boom, right away, the abduction stops. Now, he's one of the lucky ones. The abductees that I have spoken to do not have a personal relationship. In fact, I interviewed this one woman, Karina Sables, for my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And she has been abducted since she was a little girl and has never been able to stop them.
All right, let's go ahead. Get at your telephone number, your webpage once again.
Sure. The phone number is 310-457-5564.
One more time, very slowly.
310-457-WDW.spiral, like the DNA helix, double spiral, spiral staircase, spiral of life. www.spiralofLife.com, spiralofLife.com, spiralofLife.com.
It's easy to remember. It looks just like a DNA chain. Spiral of Life. We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. A fascinating program, so important. Christians really understand. Well, Len, now you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, we've been discussing politics, prophecy, and the supernatural, and once again that there's so much here, so much information. We could talk literally for hours about it, but to sum it up, and to give you the cliff notes or the shorthand version, Reader's Digest version, the current political machinations that we see globally, and it is global, but specifically in regards to what is happening in the Middle East and the fact that the radical jihadists then fulfill the ancient prophetic words described in Ezekiel 38-39, which then triggers the supernatural. And I think that this is what politics and prophecy and the supernatural, the coming great deception and the Luciferian game, this is what really talks about it and discusses. And it does it very slowly, starting out with the political, focusing on Israel, moving into the prophetic prophecies that have been fulfilled, talking about what prophecy is and how it has to be 100% accurate, how it goes outside the space-time continuum, who seems to be benevolent, call him God. I believe it that, you know, he is a benevolent God, and I believe his son Jesus came to, you know, to set us free. And from that prophetic viewpoint, it then moves into the supernatural and discusses a variety of supernatural manifestations, crop circles, cattle mutilations, the alien abduction phenomenon, of course, UFO sightings, which in my opinion is a return of the ancient Nephilim, which, and elsewhere in the Bible. So the book has just chock full of information. There's 25 pages a footnote at the end. It's well researched, and I believe it should be in the days that we live in today. People really need to get this thing and read it, and then give it to their friends, and hopefully arm. The reason why I wrote it, Dr. Stan, was to arm the Christians to what is coming, to warn of the coming deception, and to give to the non-believer to wake them up to the fact that, you know, they've been set down thousands of years ago. So I'm speaking of the prophetic, and we're watching them manifest. And it gives an overview and a worldview which the non-believer then can weigh for themselves and decide whether there's any merit to what I bring to the table.
Well, I think the most important thing is to prepare Christians for what lies ahead. There's so many Christians in America today, as there were Christians in Germany and in Europe, you know, prior to the Second World War, who believe that we have a book called Hitler's Cross that goes into how they use the same techniques in Hitler's Germany that are being used in America today, but the people lost their faith. Well, we're going to have to let you go, Lynn. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, if you're interested in getting a tape of the program, and we do talk during the breaks, why a lot of information is brought out there. So we do hope that if you'd like to get a copy of the program tape, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we were simply commenting that in Hitler's Germany, why, of course, the ministers were doing just what they're doing here. They were told to preach Romans 13 and reassure the people that they were not to object at all to any of the things that were happening. And then so many of the ministers rapture before anything bad happens. Well, I'm not going to debate the rapture, but what happens if it happens 30 years after America has fallen? What happens to the faith of the Christians of this country? Well, the same thing that happened to the faith of the German people. And, of course, they lost their faith, and there was a great falling away. I saw Germany after the Second World War. I saw a rubble in Mainz and in Frankfurt and in Munich, and I was stationed in Germany. And I understand why people lost their faith, because their ministers that lied to them in America are not prepared for the difficult times that are coming. And so this is why I do what I do 5 hours a day. And so we do carry Lutzer's book, Erwin Lutzer's book, Hitler's Cross, and although it does get into the rapture, it does get into the preaching of Romans 13, and then, of course, we certainly have hope that many of you out there will want to get Lynn Mazzulli's book. I think it's important, which is why we have him on, and interviews with Joanna Michelson, who is a medium, and, of course, we have her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. That the beautiful side of evil, the tape said, is the supernatural. And give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like to, of course, get either the book Hitler's Cross or The Beautiful Side of Evil or the four tape set. And then, of course, we have a great deal of other international. We have Satanism and Deliverance, a four tape set. We have certainly the satanic crimes getting into the background of the Bilderbergers, the people who really run the world today from behind the scenes. But that's Satanic Crimes. We have both a four-tape set and the book. And, of course, we have the book Hostage to the Devil. It's written by Father Malachi Martin. I didn't even know who he was when I first read the book back called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. And we suggest you get the book and the four-tape or four CD set as well. So go to our website. That's RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. We have a great deal of information there that will help you to understand the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged today. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you get the book or the CD, or get them both together along with the tape and the Brotherhood of Darkness. It will introduce you to this whole idea of the supernatural war in which we're engaged. And then, of course, my talk on the forbidden secret. And it's a forbidden secret, of course, and we have a four-tape set on the secret behind the secret, which, of course, explains you why Oprah Winfrey is so wealthy. Of course, she is pushing this whole philosophy put out by Rhonda Burns,